Welcome to Wednesday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are glad that you are with us today. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, another edition of Prairie Plates. Rhombus Guys marks 15 years in downtown Fargo. And another celebration, 20 years of funk. We'll visit with members of Post-Traumatic Funk Syndrome as they look forward to celebrating their 20th anniversary this Friday. And we begin Main Street today with the fact that North Dakota ranks among the nation's riskiest states for teen drivers. Prairie Beat explores why and what families can do to keep young drivers safe.
Hey there, I'm Eric Detheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We're back again with another episode of Prairie Beat,
our weekly news podcast here at Prairie Public. Oh, Danielle, I mean, what a week this is. I'm sure there are other things that are going on in the world aside from what happened yesterday, but yeah. We are still just mired in misery of the death of Dolly Parton, and then we find out somebody else decided to
Tim Curry passed away today. Also, they're both 80 years old, too. Absolute American icons.
Oh, totally. So we have to have a double feature now of 9 to 5 and the Rocky Horror Picture Show back. I think it'll be camp. And so aside from that awful news, what is on the beat this week?
All right. Well, before we begin, quick question. How old were you when you learned how to drive?
15.
Okay. Well, I was 11. My dad taught me how to drive in his F-150 work truck. It had toolboxes and a fuel tank in the flatbed. And on the farm, I was basically the gopher for two or three summers there. I had a dad-imposed speed limit of like 30 miles per hour, and the truck had a bench seat in it. So when I moved the seat forward so I could reach the pedals, the whole seat moved up. And when I was giving rides to people between fields or farmyards or whatever, whoever I was shuttling had to be that close to the dashboard as well.
Okay, it sounds very North Dakota, very wild, very rural sort of... very, very rule averse. Like, so my own daughter it's not that far off from that age. I mean, my goodness, she just started the fifth grade today. How many more years we have till driving age? I just can't imagine her behind the wheel of any vehicle, let alone a work truck.
I know. It's kind of wild for me to think about, too. But honestly, you know, it is. It is very rural. And it's just the time and the circumstance that we were in at that time. And I think a lot of rural kids have similar stories. Despite those circumstances, though, like any type of precautions we may have taken back then, it was still probably not the safest thing for me to be doing at that age. There was a survey that came out this week from the finance firm Wallet Hub about how all 50 states stack up against each other when it comes to safety for teen drivers. And North Dakota ended up in the bottom 10.
Ooh. It's Chip, C-H-I-P, Lupo, L-U-P-O, writer and analyst at Wallet Hub.
So we talked to Chip from time to time about the different surveys that they do at Wallet Hub, and North Dakota came in at 41 out of 50 on this list. He says there are a number of different things to consider when it comes to road safety for teens.
We took all 50 states and we evaluate them across three key dimensions when it comes to driving: safety, economic environment, which is key, which is often overlooked, and driving laws. And from there, we applied 23 metrics, and those range from things such as driving schools per capita, quality of roads, maximum cost of speeding ticket, cost of car repairs. And we do so to kind of create kind of a comprehensive look other than just things such as accident rates or insurance, because obviously teen drivers are inexperienced, so there's always going to be a risk of an accident.
Well, that really makes a lot of sense, especially the part about speeding tickets. And I know that we've talked about that before. Traffic fines in North Dakota are not all that punitive.
There will be talk of that, though, in the next legislative session this coming spring. The speed limits on the interstate highways have increased, and now it seems that lawmakers may be a little interested in amending those speeding fines, so we'll see what happens there. Not much has really changed in about 50 years, so it might be time. Laws, of course, do play into this, but Chip Lupo was quick to point out as well that other states in the bottom 10, like South Dakota, Idaho, Nebraska, Wyoming, Montana, these are rural states that will have a lot in common. People drive a lot more miles in states like this on average, nearly 13,000 miles per year. And there are things Chip mentioned as well that don't get considered often, the economic factors. Car repairs are very expensive in North Dakota. And also adding a teen driver to your insurance policy is a hit to the wallet as well.
North Dakota has the sixth highest average car repairs at $364.62. Now, insurance is kind of a mixed bag because states, you know, insurance is a responsibility of the states. and North Dakota fared close to the bottom, 48th in terms of punitive insurance companies towards high-risk drivers, meaning you're not getting punished enough, more or less, for bad driving behavior. 114% increase in your car insurance when you add a teen driver, the 13th highest in the country. So that's a pretty eye-opening stat right there.
Yeah, I can see how that could create a little less incentive for good behavior. Like, yes, the teen insurance rates are high, but they don't go through the roof if they get speeding tickets. And we do drive a lot more in rural states, so that clearly makes more opportunities for accidents and things like that. And certainly it's an issue across the board, but distracted driving, I got to say, that's probably a bit more pronounced for teenagers.
Yes, Chip Lupo said that, but I also have some law enforcement muscle behind that claim too.
Obviously, the first thing we think of as distractions is a cell phone, but there's so many more distractions than that. That could be a simple thing of your water bottle that fell down to the ground and you're picking it up and you go out of your lane. That's a huge distraction, right? That water bottle is not necessary to the operation of your vehicle. Just leave it there for safety reasons. You can get it once you stop.
That's Bennett Bitts. He's a trooper with the North Dakota Highway Patrol. He says other distractions can even include other passengers in the vehicle. He says those can affect more than just teen drivers. So you and I are susceptible to those as well. The most important thing is paying attention to the road in front of you and not other conversations you may be having in the car. Now, when I described learning to drive when I was 11, it sounds crazy now, but back then the laws were a bit different. When you were 12, you could actually get a farm permit in North Dakota. And I think that was going to be the plan for me, but clearly it's not entirely safe for kids that young to be driving. So the laws changed and the farm permit went away once I did turn 12. I got my license to drive at age 14, and that has since changed too. You can get your permit at age 14, but you must have someone in the car with you with at least 3 years of driving experience in the car. And at 15, you can take a driver's ed course and then a road course to get your license.
It is a restricted driver's license in North Dakota. So there's a couple things with that is, you know, there's no driving between 9 p.m. or sunset, whichever is later. There are some exceptions to that rule where if it has to do with a school event or school activity or work or any religious activities. And then there's no electronic device use allowed. That includes even a hands-free phone call. So can't call home asking mom what's for supper or something like that. You know, even if it's a hands-free law. So you got to make that phone call before you even leave the parking lot if you're age 15. And then once you hit the age of 16, you are then in an unrestricted license where those couple extra curfews and the electronic device rule still applies. But once you hit 16, you have a full driver's license at that point.
So you said you got your license at 14?
That was the law back then, yep.
Wow, North Dakota, the wild frontier. Woo. Have to say, it does sound like over the years, steps have been made to make things a little more restrictive and safer for those teen drivers, even those on the farm. And even though it hasn't improved our standing much on the national stage as far as safety goes, and I guess with some of the factors at play here with the miles, we have to drive, et cetera, there isn't much we can do about that. But with the legislature in session again in a few months, perhaps, there will be more movement on that front.
Another thing Chip Lupo at Wallet Hub said was that in some states, things are just done differently. You know, in many places, you take your driving lessons at an actual driving school, whereas places like North Dakota, and this was the case for me, like driver's ed is offered as a summer elective through the school system, and it's a football coach or something that teaches it. Mine was the boys' golf coach, actually.
Yeah.
So there are some political, some structural and funding things going on there that could improve, but it's a much larger system that would have to be looked at there. And he also mentioned things like, you know, things like teen drinking and driving could improve. Teens in North Dakota also do tend to drive distracted. In their survey, he said 55% of those surveyed had been cited in the last 30 days for texting or emailing while driving. It's a far more comprehensive issue than what we may consider on the surface. And Trooper Bitts does say that a lot of traffic stops they do for speeding and other infractions do include frank discussions about measures all drivers can take to be safer on the roads. There are things all of us can do to make the roads safer.
So off the top of my head, no speeding, no distractions, and wear your seatbelt. Those are some pretty basic good tips and certainly a lot for all of us to think about as our kids are coming of age. getting behind the wheels of vehicles. I know I'm not going to be able to teach my child how to drive a stick shift because they don't make them anymore. But we all have to help them understand the responsibility they're going to have as drivers. Thanks for all that today, Danielle. Have you in the newsroom been working on any other stories this week?
Well, this week our headlines include a UND professor being named an ambassador to the Council on Foreign Relations.
At the dig site we have just south of Bismarck Mandan, we found two really nice T-Rex teeth.
The popularity of North Dakota's annual dinosaur digs. And Dave's Do You Know That column this week is great. It's about the difference between North Dakota's legislative sessions and reconvened sessions.
Ah, yes. Always great to be able to gain more context on the day's news with Dave's super-duper institutional knowledge on North Dakota politics. It's such an asset for us at Prairie Public and for you, dear listeners. So great. Thank you for all that, Danielle, today.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that's it for this week's Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Detheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
Prairie Beat drops every Wednesday here at Prairie Public. You can subscribe to it wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Right now in North Dakota, one in four adults is caring for someone they love. AARP offers a family caregiving guide with information, planning tools, and North Dakota resources for family caregivers. The guide is available at no cost at aarp.org/ndcarekit. Support for this announcement comes from AARP.
Welcome to another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Eon. This week we're going to celebrate a 15th anniversary of a very famous restaurant in downtown Fargo. And they also have locations in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and Mentor, Minnesota. Rhombus Guys Pizza. It's a place I've been going to in Grand Forks and in Fargo for quite a long time, and I enjoy it very much. And I enjoy my two guests today, Drew Ballstead, who is the general manager of Rhombus Guys Fargo, and Kaylin Langness, assistant manager of Rhombus Guys Fargo. Welcome to Prairie Plates.
It's a pleasure to be here again.
Happy to be here indeed.
Thanks for coming in today. We'll talk a little bit about the anniversary, talk about the specials, the celebration, and then we'll get into food a little bit because I do like your pizzas, Drew.
Well, we appreciate that, Rick. You order enough of them, so I did get that.
I do. I'm well-seasoned with your menu. Well, you're going to be celebrating this Saturday, August 29th, the 15th anniversary at the 606 Main Avenue location in Fargo, not the Grand Forks location. I think that's going to celebrate like a 20th anniversary.
20th anniversary next year. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Isn't that crazy?
So you've had a lot of success in the Red River Valley. What do you attribute to that success? You see a lot of restaurants opening and closing, especially in downtown Fargo these days. What's the success story?
It's hard to nail down to just kind of one thing. The main thing is the customers, right? If you don't have customers coming in, if you don't have a loyal following, you're not going to be able to be successful. And you even see some fabulous local restaurants that have a big customer base, like Burn Bombs, for example, that doesn't even keep them going. So the other part is the employees and kind of the culture that we've built at Rhombus Guys, trying to take care of those customers and trying to take care of our employees. And if you can nail those two things in the restaurant business, you're probably going to have some success.
I would say the people are the secret. I feel welcome when I go in there. It's a great environment. The food is always good. The chefs talk to you, bartenders, even the managers are nice.
Sometimes.
Drew, how long have you been working at Rhombus Guys?
I joined Rhombus Guys in 2012, just as a server/bartender. I took over as general manager in 2014 and never looked back.
Kaylin, how long have you worked at Rhombus Guys now?
Yeah, I've been at Rhombus Guys since 2018. It was my first job. I started as a hostess and then I just never left, graduated college and still never left. I'm right where I want to be.
Describe Rhombus Guys for our listeners, if you can, Kaylin. It's kind of eclectic. It's fun.
Yeah, it's a funky vibe. You're going to find something from beers to fancy cocktails, kind of something for everybody. Big family, a place where you can find friends, no matter if you're an employee or a customer or just stopping in one time, you're going to remember the place.
Rhombus is special for like a pizza-oriented restaurant, pizza focus. Kaylin, what do you think makes it different than other pizza restaurants you've been to?
We do pizza a bit differently. I mean, we just have so many options, lots of fun ones, things that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be on pizza. And we do the pizza of the month. That's something that we strive for, to come up with new ideas and do fun things that you can't find other places.
And we'll talk a little bit more about the pizza of the month here in a little bit. We're talking with Drew Ballstead and Kaylin Langsness of Rhombus Guys, Fargo location today here on Prairie Plates, about a 15th anniversary event celebration coming up this Saturday at their location at 606 Main Avenue in downtown Fargo. Well, let's talk about food a little bit. What specials are you going to be having for your celebration this Saturday?
Like I said earlier, you can't get to 15 years without a big part of it being, or the main part of it, being your customers and being your employees. So we kind of did some specials that we wanted to highlight those two groups. So it's 15-year anniversary, so we're going to do $15 18-inch pizzas.
Wow.
That is a very good deal.
That's a very good deal.
We are a locally owned place, and you know, everybody knows how crazy food is right now. So our pizzas typically are not the most cheap, but you know, a $15 18-inch, that's any of our 18-inch deals, any of our 18-inch pizzas. We're going to have $1.50 draft beers, well drinks, and kind of our sipper drinks too, which is also a very good deal, especially on some of our IPAs. Come and drink us dry, that's fine. We're going to have some gift card drawings kind of every hour at the 15-minute mark throughout the day. Get to draw a gift card. Those are going to range in a bunch of different amounts, but there'll be some $150 gift cards in there. And then, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do was, like I said, the employees are kind of the backbone of the place. I've been there quite a long time. You know, I wasn't there from the beginning, but I joined in 2012. We opened in 2011. And just so many great employees that have come through there. And so for anybody who has ever worked for us, it doesn't matter if you're there for a day or if you are still there, we're going to do a free pizza for anybody who's ever been employed by Rhombus Guys.
I think that's really awesome. And I'm going to come and wash dishes the day before this anniversary.
We might need it the day after.
Yeah, that's true. I might be too late for the free pizza then, but that's okay. What would you say is the most popular pizza customers order at Rhombus Guys?
Yeah, hands down, most popular is going to be our T-Rex pizza. I mean, we live in the Midwest. People love meat. And so it's just a meat lover's pie, and we've won best pizza over the years with that pizza, and yeah, people love it.
And what's all on that? Pepperoni, sausage?
Yeah, pepperoni, sausage, bacon, beef, Canadian bacon.
Sounds good to me.
Not my personal favorite. I like vegetables, but people love it. You know, like she said, it's the Midwest. People love meat.
I want to ask about the pizza of the month, Drew. It's a birria pizza.
Yeah, the birria. It's been something that's kind of been in the back of my head for a long time, not just because birria, you know, tacos are so popular now, but, you know, I'd had them, you know, years ago before they became popular and have always loved it and kind of loved the concept. But I wasn't quite sure if people would be open to kind of the dipping aspect of it. It's taking pizza and turning it on its head a little bit. You know, most people are used to pizza being kind of a self-contained type of thing. But we did a pizza a couple years ago called the French Dip. One of our owners came up with that one, and it went gangbusters. People just loved it and loved the dipping aspect of it. So then I revisited the concept of a birria pizza, you know, earlier this year, and yeah, it's great. I mean, it's going to have birria meat. It's going to have mozzarella, cojita cheese, white onion, and cilantro after. And then we house make a birria consomme that is for dipping in it, and it's kind of what makes the pizza is the consomme.
I love it, and I need to try that. And consomme for birria tacos is usually a beef broth that has a lot of chili in it. It's kind of the braising liquid.
Yeah, and that's what we did. Now, we don't have traditional ovens. We just have the kind of impinger ovens. You know, the birria meat is something that we bought in. All the different kind of large food groups have been playing with some of this. And it's kind of why it took enough time that they have now have made one that are kind of up to our standards. We make the consomme ourselves, so it's going to have ancho and guajillo chilies, beef base, a bunch of different of your favorite Mexican spices and all that kind of stuff. And then we kind of, you know, make our own chili paste and then slow cook it and add the stock. And it's really kind of a labor of love. It takes quite a while.
That might be a new favorite. I need to try that one.
It's only here till the end of the month, so you only got a few days left.
Well, Kaylin, I'd like to talk a little bit about the bar because I see you back behind the bar sometimes, and it's a full bar, beer, wine, cocktails. Talk a little bit about the bar.
We got a huge bar. We got so many bottles of liquor, 24 taps. We do a specialty cocktail menu every season, well, winter, summer. And we've had a lot of local beers on our taps as well that people really enjoy coming and trying those. Bartenders that love to experiment as well, so they can kind of help figure out what you like, what you want, work with you. And one of the things that I really like is we have added mocktails. We're starting to put focus on those. They've kind of been up and coming, and I personally don't drink myself, so everyone is going to find something at the bar, whether they drink or they don't. And it gives you opportunities to try so many different things.
And you have a lot of local beers on tap. Mm-hmm. How many beers do you have on tap?
24.
Wow. 24. We don't keep any domestics on tap, really. We have Busch Light now, only because one of our owners made me.
It's popular here.
But when I took over the bar program back in 2014, I got rid of all of the yellow beers, which really, you know, opens it up to be able to feature more local things or things from kind of around the region. You know, we're not like Front Street back in the day where we only have regional beers, but, you know, we try to focus on that. We try to, you know, support local brewers, distillers, all of those kind of things, you know, kind of in the region, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, because they support us too. A lot of these places will have our frozen pizzas and all that kind of thing. And, you know, rising waters raise all ships. So if we can feature another local business or a regional business and give them some more customers, then we're happy to do it.
I think that's really great. And you can get some of those beers on the rooftop. There is a rooftop when the weather is cooperating during warmer seasons. And it's going to be a part of the Saturday celebration. There may be a special movie. We can't say which one. But Brent Brandt does these special movies around town, Fargo Theater, Rhombus Guy's Rooftop. And I think that starts at 10 p.m.
10 p.m., yeah. So we do a summer movie series. Anybody listening to this now has missed all of them, but this last one. So every Saturday we do a movie starting at 10 o'clock. Most of it, you know, we kind of publish the schedule ahead of time, let everybody know what they're going to see. But yeah, my buddy Brett Brandt, who does a bunch of great movies at the Fargo Theater, kind of partnered with him this year. And my favorite thing that he does is doing secret movies where you show up, he picks the movie, and you don't know what you're going to see until it starts to roll. And I always thought that was really fun. So in coordination with the anniversary party, he's going to do a secret movie starting at 10 p.m. Come and see what it is. I have no idea myself. I told him, don't even tell me. I don't want to know.
Well, anything you'd like to add, Kaylin or Drew, about the anniversary celebration on Saturday?
Being downtown in downtown Fargo for so long, you know, you see restaurants that have been there before you, like Sammy's, that are still crushing it. You see other restaurants that come around that just blow your mind, like Burn Bombs, and now they're gone and we're still here. And, you know, it really makes you feel blessed to be in this community and to be somewhere that customers continue to want to go to. And, you know, it's not something that happens overnight. It takes a long time, and it takes a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of kind of community spirit to have a local restaurant that can have the longevity that we have. And from a personal level, I feel very blessed that we've been able to serve so many people and touch so many lives.
Congratulations on the celebration and the anniversary.
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, I think it's really special. Well, how can folks find you online? RhombusGuysPizza.com, Facebook, Instagram?
Yeah, RhombusGuysPizza.com, Rhombus Guys Fargo on a lot of social tape things, Rhombus Pizza. If you put in Rhombus Guys, you'll find links to all of the stuff. We're all over the internet.
Well, come say hi to Drew and Kaylin this Saturday, Rhombus Guys Fargo at 606 Main Avenue, celebrating 15 years. Congratulations again, and thank you so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking to you both.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
This has been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Eon. We'll talk to you next week.
Ahead on this Wednesday's Main Street, members of Fargo Moorhead's post-traumatic funk syndrome look back on two decades of music, memorable performances, and giving audiences their unique sound. They'll celebrate their 20th anniversary this Friday at the TAC Event Center in Dilworth. That's ahead. Stay with us. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. For 20 years, post-traumatic funk syndrome has been bringing the sound and the spectacle of the great horn bands to stages across the region. The Fargo-Moorhead Ensemble combines horns and keyboards, bass, drums, guitar, male and female vocals. It's a repertoire that draws blood from Chicago, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Tower of Power, James Brown, and others for sure. Along the way, the group has performed with school bands, community ensembles, and the Fargo-Moorhead Symphony Orchestra recently and established a holiday tradition of its own as well. This Friday, August 28th, Post-Traumatic Funk Syndrome will celebrate its 20th anniversary with an all-ages performance at the TAC, T-A-K, music venue in Dilworth. Joining us are two of the longtime members of the band. Russell Peterson is an associate professor of music at Concordia College, as well as the band's alto saxophonist, coordinator, and arranger. And Dr. Nathaniel Dickey is chair of Concordia's music department, a professor of trombone, and appropriately enough, the trombonist for the post-traumatic funk syndrome. Russ and Nat, welcome to Main Street, and congratulations on 20 years of making the music.
Hey, thanks. Great to be with you.
Yeah.
Russ, take me back to 2006 or maybe even before. What happened in your musical life that kind of made you decide that the FM area needed a large horn-driven funk band?
Yeah, good question. What was going through our heads? Well, when our original bass player, his name was Toby Curtwright, approached me and he said, hey, I've got a couple charts arranged for rock band with horns. And I said, oh, I'd love that. I've never really done that in my career. And I've always loved the horn bands, Tower of Power and Earth, Wind, and Fire, of course. He said, yeah, I've got a couple tunes that are arranged for three horns, which would mean the band would only be, you know, nine people, which is still way too many if you ever want to make any money. He said, I've also got some that are arranged for six horns. Now we're into the 12 people range. And I said, well, we're not going to make any money whether it's 9 or 12, so we might as well just bring everybody along. So we decided on six horns. So the band has two trumpets, trombone, three saxophones, alto, tenor, barry, piano, bass, drums, guitar, and two singers, a male vocalist and a female. So we can cover everything from James Brown to Aretha Franklin. So there's really nothing that the band can't do then. And we read the charts that this bass player had. I got so excited, I started to arrange some really quick. Before you knew it, we had an evening's worth of music, and we did our first concert 20 years ago, downtown Fargo at Dempsey's, which is, of course, still there. The upstairs called the Aquarium. And I still remember it. It was absolutely packed. I don't know how we packed the room our first night, but it was really a beautiful, magical night.
Matt, how did you find the band?
Well, Russ found me, which is typically how this works. I was still relatively new here at the time. And Russ said, hey, Nat, we're going to do this funk band. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And showed up. I mean, honestly, I had played in a group like this in college very briefly, just a student group. And since then, it really had not had, I'd listened to a lot of the music, but had not had a chance to do any playing of it. So I was just excited. And I think that's kind of how a number of us got involved. I mean, Russ, I always call Russ the impresario of Fargo-Moorhead. So he knows who to call. And, you know, and when we did that first gig, at least in my memory, none of us was expecting it to be anything but a one-off. You know, we're going to do this. God, it would be fun. We'll play this thing. Great. And we played it. And then next thing you know, Russ is like, hey, guys, we got another gig. And I was like, what?
Nice. Tell me about it, Russ. Was this, so this wasn't this big vision that you had just mapped out that said, hey, 20 years from now, we're going to be playing our anniversary concert here down the road. It didn't happen that way.
Not at all. Not at all. It was, let's kind of just see where this goes and see if people can put up with. There's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes with any rock band. You're talking about not only agreeing on the music you're going to do, agree on who gets the solo, who gets the front, who gets to stand where. There's crazy discussions. And then who's going to carry the amps and the cords and the speakers into the place, set them up, who's going to run sound, who's going to pack up after the gig at 2 a.m.
Who's going to write the checks?
Who's going to balance the books? So I think we were pretty naively just jumping into it with both feet, but we just kept having so much fun and we just kept getting calls. We really have never booked this band much, meaning we've never gone out and actively tried to find events. They just keep coming at us.
Yeah, I remember within that first year, we started getting more calls than we wanted to do. Like all of us have jobs, you know, and most of us are teachers. And we at some point we had to talk about how many do we want to do in a month, you know? And I feel like we, at one point, we were like, 2 a month is enough. Except in the summer, we can do a few more. And then we started getting calls for things like weddings, corporate parties, things like that. And it was like, oh, okay. So now we have to think about how many of those can we do? You know, it was just, I mean, what a great problem to have.
I'm sure everyone who's listening is wondering the same question that I wondered and am wondering even now. When I first heard about you guys, what the heck does post-traumatic funk syndrome mean? Where did it come from?
We're still trying to figure that out. That was just a joke set out by our lead singer at the time, Jay Beach. And everybody just laughed and said, what the hell? We're just kind of doing this almost as a joke thing.
When you were at Dempsey's, were you the post-traumatic?
Oh, yeah. We had posters. Was that pre-internet, Nat?
That might have been close.
The internet, but it was pre-smartphone.
It was pre-smartphone, and it was pre-Facebook.
Yep.
It was pre-social media. So we were still kind of advertising with posters on telephone poles, I think.
Is this work for you guys, or is this just fun?
God, no. I mean, we always say we charge to load in and load out.
Mm-hmm.
And we play for free. Yep.
Exactly.
We're going to get together Friday night. Alum are part of this gig here. What's going to happen?
Yeah, so we've contacted all of our, we call them the band exes, all of our alum, and we have 5 coming in Friday night to sit in. I'll go down the list. Ryan Jackson, he's teaches at MSUM here in Moorhead. He's a recording technology teacher. He was one of our former vocalists. He'll come in. Another vocalist, Jay Beach, who now lives in the Twin Cities. He's coming up to sit in. Another singer, Sarah Morkin. She's the daughter of Mike Morkin, who used to be the anchor, I think KBOY. She's coming in from Madison. We have 2 former guitar players, Tom Carvell and John Rudolph, coming back to join us too. So it'll be a full stage.
You guys mentioned that, hey, you have jobs, you know, can't do this all the time, but do you wish that your job, so to speak, was this and you could just make a go of this all across the country? It seems to me you're good enough to do that.
Well, I'm just going to say there's a part of me that does wish that, no doubt. But honestly, having read biographies and watched documentaries of musicians who tour all the time, as fun as that life looks, there's a lot of hardship that can go into that, being away from home, and just some of the things that can happen on the road. I feel like we're kind of in the sweet spot, to be honest with you. We live in this amazing musical community of Fargo-Moorhead that's, you know, it's not too big, it's not too small. It has an incredible community of people who appreciate music. I never stop being surprised and amazed and grateful for the people that come out, not only to post-traumatic, but other shows that we do with the symphony and jazz and things like that. I mean, it's just such a great area for music. And the fact that we get to do this, which I just have to give Russ a lot of the credit. I mean, Russ, like I said, is kind of the front man of the band. Not kind of. He is the front man of the band. And honestly, the person who does a lot of the setting up and tearing down. I mean, we're there to help. So to have someone like Russ leading is incredible. And yes, we probably could tour more. I don't know how Russ feels about it, but from my perspective, we play about as much as I want to.
How do you feel, Russ?
Yeah, I'm with Nat. You know, we have this great musical life here, and Nat and I both love teaching. So we're both teaching here at Concordia College. We like to work with the high school students. We like to play in the Fargo-Moorhead Symphony. We like to play jazz. We play jazz every Monday and Thursday nights. So, like, we have a great, rich musical life, And if you go on the road and you're playing one band, one set on the road every night, I think I'd actually get a little bit bored. I like the variety that Nat and I have in our lives, where we both straddle both jazz, rock, and classical music. Every week we're doing something different. So there's always the what if with guys like us. What if we would have moved to New York? Could we have toured with Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah.
So who knows, but we're happy where we are.
I drove through Concordia's campus on Sunday, saw all these freshmen maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
yes.
Some upperclassmen who are kind of getting ready to go.
Yep.
And here they are, they're coming into your class and they're seeing these two dudes and then they're learning about you.
Yep.
About what you do. What do they tell you?
Well, I'll start and then Russ probably has more stories than me, but it's certainly fun to, visit high schools in the area and meet teachers and students and, have them ask questions about, what's it like to be playing professionally and teaching and, realizing that, that's a dream that we followed and were successful in. And there are kids today thinking the same thing we did 20, 30 years ago. As society changes and technology changes and all these things, like music is kind of a constant that people need and care about. And so it's pretty gratifying to have students come. I just met with four new advisees who are all trombone players, and they're just excited to be here. They want to start playing in our Concordia band and jazz band and hope to get a chance to play through college and beyond.
Russ?
My students love it. We get a lot of our students coming out to our concerts, so they kind of don't know what to make of us. We're college teachers by day, wannabe rock and rollers at night. But the great thing is we always have our students sit in with the band. So everything's written out for the horn section. So if you're a good reader, you could come in and read the trombone book. You could read the tenor sax book. It's all printed out well. So when we get good students, that's kind of their reward. They get to sit in and play a gig with the post-traumatic.
Enjoying my conversation with Russell Peterson. He's an associate professor of music at Concordia College, as well as the band's alto saxophonist, coordinator, and arranger, and Dr. Nathaniel Dickey. He's the chair of Concordia's music department and professor of trombone, and appropriately enough, the trombonist for post-traumatic funk syndrome, who's celebrating its 20th anniversary this Friday night, as you said, in front of the FM Symphony Orchestra at 6 p.m.
Yeah, Friday night will be a great night, as we were talking about earlier, bringing back some alumni of the band. We've got some commemorative t-shirts people can buy. We're going to play some of our old tunes, some of our new tunes, and really just have a celebration of this 20 years that I still pinch myself that I'm in a rock band that's been together 20 years. I don't know how that happened.
It seems to me there are fewer and fewer bands like yours across the country that 20, 30, 50 years ago, we would have found a lot more bands like yours. Do you agree with that? And why is that?
I agree. It's hard. You need somebody to manage 12 people's schedules. You need to have music that the 12 people can read, and you need 12 people that can read. Check this out. We all read music. A lot of rock musicians do not read. They just listen and they come in and they play. But I like to do specific arrangements. I'll take this song and I put a little tag or I do a thing. If my drummer and my guitar player couldn't read, it would be very difficult. So we have this group of people that can really read anything that I put on paper, which is really fun for me. But then you could just show up to the gig and read it. So don't tell anybody. I hope nobody's listening, but this band doesn't rehearse that often. We should rehearse more.
I want to ask when you do rehearse, then are your rehearsals different today than they were 20 plus years ago?
Definitely. So we'll probably, when we do rehearse, we're rehearsing the new stuff. We don't need to rehearse the Stevie Wonder song we've been doing for 20 years. So if I write a couple new things or write some new tunes for Symphony Rocks, we'll get together and read them. And really the first rehearsal might be just a, hey, watch that, cut off on one, cut off on two, forte piano on this. But then everything is ready to go. So it's kind of fun. I think that's why we've been able to last for 20 years is it's really kind of a low maintenance group. People show up, ready to go. It's fun. They go home.
It seemed, and you like each other. It's apparent to me that the band gets along. I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but I want to ask it again because I love the answer. Nat, you can play one song of the songs you do. What are you giving us?
Rosanna by Toto.
Okay.
My absolute favorite tune.
All right,
I don't know
Russ.
Why, but I just love it.
Mine is September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Have you seen them do it live?
Yes, I have. And when they did it with Chicago, yeah. Because Earth, Wind, and Fire and Chicago toured together for a while.
One of the great concerts I've ever seen.
You've seen it.
In Denver, absolutely.
Oh, just the great. Two groups playing each other's music.
And
just
with each other.
With each other. Brilliant.
Very brilliant. Is it hard for you guys to play with another band like you did with the FM Symphony Orchestra?
No, I would say that's another kind of benefit of sort of the eclectic nature of the musicians in the band. We're all pretty experienced in a lot of different styles and contexts. Also, having an arranger like Russ makes it easy because he makes the two groups fit together really well. And then also having done it now 15 years, it falls together pretty nicely. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about, we were just talking about not rehearsing a lot. But at the same time, we do have occasional subs. Everyone in the band has at least one, if not more, subs that can step in if we're sick or busy or something like that. I think what's been amazing over the years is when a sub comes in, you know, if they're good, which they always are because we don't pick people who aren't ready, they just fit right in. So, for example, Friday night, our regular drummer wasn't available. We had a guy from the Twin Cities come up and play who's played with us a bunch. Great. Super fun to have a different voice on that part, you know. Or sometimes we'll even have a sub singer if one of our singers isn't available. And then we might change the set list a little bit to make sure we're playing songs that singer can sing. But I think that's one of the things that makes it fun. I love to play with all 12 of us like we're going to do Friday night. But then, you know, occasionally one of my students will sit in or one of Russ's students. And it adds to the flavor to just have a different personality in the group. Even though the arrangements are the same, just subtle differences just make it kind of an interesting thing to be a part of.
Both of you get to complete this sentence, Rush, you first. You know you've attended a post-traumatic funk syndrome concert when?
When you hear Earth, Wind, and Fire.
All right, Matt?
When you can't stop tapping your toes when you're leaving.
I got to see your Christmas concert last year. Are you going to continue that tradition?
Yes. Yeah. We've been in talks with the Sanctuary, and even though we had worked with Jade Presents and they're no longer booking shows, we found a way to work directly with the Sanctuary. So we do have the date lined up. I could even tell you, there it is. It's December 18.
It's a great ticket if you have a chance to watch for it. All right. So we're going to have the 20-year celebration this Friday night at the TAC in Dilworth.
Yes.
The day after. What's ahead for you guys?
Well, that's our sixth show in August. So I think we've exceeded our quota for the
rest.
Well, probably.
But you're starting a new school year.
Working at our regular jobs. Right. Yeah, exactly.
The next day we actually have a Concordia Music Department faculty party at my house. So I'm cleaning and cooking the next morning.
It's also the first day of Pep Band, which I direct. So
yeah, we just wake up and get down to the next thing.
But really, 5-10 years from now, do you think we're going to see the band, the PTFS, in the Fargo-Moorhead area?
I don't see why not. Nat, what do you think?
Absolutely. As long as Russ is still willing to lead it, I'll be there.
And lastly, before we go, FM's music aura, if you will, is what?
Eclectic.
Agreed.
You can go out and hear a metal band, a country band, a jazz band,
an art song
band, yep. Singer-songwriter. Just one guy with a guitar.
If you include the colleges, there's just tremendous variety happening at the three colleges, you know.
Right, and then bands ensembles. And orchestras and choirs.
Faculty soloists, guest artists, amazing.
Post-traumatic funk syndrome will celebrate its 20th anniversary Friday, August 28th. That's this Friday at the TAC Music Venue. That's at 1710 Center Avenue in Dilworth. It's an all-ages, family-friendly event. Begins with the doors opening at 6 o'clock. Our guests have been Russell Peterson, associate professor of music at Concordia College and the band's alto saxophonist, coordinator, and arranger, and Dr. Nathaniel Nat Dickey, chair of Concordia's music department, professor of trombone, and the band's trombonist.
Craig, can I interrupt and just say, if people want to get tickets, they can get them on the TAC website. And
please.
It is possible this show will sell out, so I would recommend trying to get tickets in advance if you want to attend.
We hope that many, many do, and that you fill the place. It's worth it. If you haven't seen them perform, why should they come? Why should they come and see the band?
Why should you listen to Stevie Wonder?
Yeah.
Why should you listen to Aretha Franklin? and James Brown. It's timeless music. Chicago, Peter Gabriel. Who knows? B.B. King.
It's real music too, and I don't mean to denigrate, but I know there is music being produced today that feels to me like it's cooked up in a studio and it doesn't necessarily have a lot of real human beings involved. But this music is all happening when you're listening, and it's 12 people collaborating. And also TAC is a great venue. If you haven't been to TAC to hear a concert, they've got a wonderful stage, they've got a wonderful sound system, they do have a bar, and it's just a great place to listen to music.
Congratulations to both of you and all the members of Post Traumatic Funk Syndrome for bringing us 20 years of music, a lot of energy and funk in the region. To you both, thanks for joining us on Main Street.
Thanks, Craig.
Thanks, Craig.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for Travel with Rick Steves. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for August 26th. Edmund Halley was an English astronomer, mathematician, and physicist. In 1720, he was named the second astronomer royal. He produced a map of the stars in the southern sky and received many awards and accolades. On this date in 1682, he made the finding for which he is still remembered today. It was then that Halley identified the comet that still bears his name. It's often said that Halley discovered the comet, but that is not quite accurate. Halley studied the paths of comets observed by astronomers in 1531, 1607, and 1682. He determined they followed strikingly similar orbits. He proposed the theory that they were actually the same comet reappearing on a predictable schedule. He calculated its orbit and predicted its return in 1758. He died in 1742 and did not live to see it. But when it arrived on schedule, Halley's name became inextricably connected to that comet. By 1909, North Dakota newspapers were excited about the return of Halley's comet, which was expected in April of the following year. It had last appeared in 1835. At 74 years, the comet was just slightly ahead of schedule. There was some controversy over the reported appearance of the comet in January of 1910. Because it was visible early, some claimed it was a tramp comet and that Halley's comet would appear weeks later. The Williston Graphic newspaper noted that while local residents reported observing a comet, scientists were skeptical that it was Halley's comet. That judgment about the so-called daylight comet proved to be correct when Halley's comet finally did make its appearance in April. There were grand forecasts about the effect the comet's arrival would have. One professor predicted the stardust that will fall from the comet will have much effect on the minds of the people, adding that the comet will open up a new cycle of thought. The most famous comet in history is a ball of ice and dust about 10 miles long. It loops around the sun in a predictable pattern and is visible from Earth every 75 to 79 years. It is the only regularly recurring comet visible to the naked eye. It last appeared in 1986. Anyone hoping to see Halley's comet will have to be patient. Its next appearance is predicted to be in 2061. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by the Study ND, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
And that's it for this Wednesday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, in a closer look with the monitor, beginning September 1st, SNAP benefits in North Dakota can no longer be used for candy energy drinks and sweetened beverages. What's the impact on grocers, especially small rural stores? Plus, the Great American Folk Show takes a final bow. Host Todd Rousseau and Prairie Public's program manager and producer of the show, Eric Dethridge, reflect on 6 years of music, storytelling, and unexpected connections. That's all ahead tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.